Chapter 4. I observe the first objects that assume a distinct presence before me, as I look far back into the blank of my infancy, are my mother with her pretty hair and youthful shape, and Peggotty with no shape at all, and eyes so dark that they seem to darken their whole neighborhood in her face, and cheeks and arms so hard and red that I wonder the birds didn't peck her in preference to apples. I believe I can remember these two at a little distance apart, dwarfed to my sight, by stooping down or kneeling on the floor, and I going unsteadily from the one to the other. I have an impression on my mind which I cannot distinguish from actual remembrance, of the touch of Peggotty's forefinger as she used to hold it out to me, and of its being roughened by needlework, like a pocket nutmeg grater. This may be fancy, though I think the memory of most of us can go farther back into such times than many of us suppose. Just as I believe the power of observation in numbers of very young children to be quite wonderful for its closeness and accuracy. Indeed, I think that most grown men who are remarkable in this respect may with greater propriety be said not to have lost the faculty than to have acquired it. The rather, as I generally observe such men, to retain a certain freshness, and gentleness, and capacity of being pleased, which are also an inheritance they have preserved from their childhood. I might have a misgiving that I am meandering in stopping to say this, but that it brings me to remark that I build these conclusions, in part upon my own experience of myself. And if it should appear from anything I may set down in this narrative, that I was a child of close observation, or that as a man I have a strong memory of my childhood, I undoubtedly lay claim to both of these characteristics. Looking back, as I was saying, into the blank of my infancy, the first objects I can remember as standing out by themselves from a confusion of things, are my mother and Peggotty. What else do I remember? Let me see. There comes out of the cloud, our house not new to me, but quite familiar, in its earliest remembrance. On the ground floor is Peggotty's kitchen, opening into a backyard, with a pigeon house on a pole, in the center, without any pigeons in it, a great dog kennel in a corner, without any dog, and a quantity of fowls, that look terribly tall to me, walking about, in a menacing and ferocious manner. There is one cock who gets upon a post to crow, and seems to take particular notice of me as I look at him through the kitchen window, who makes me shiver, he is so fierce. Of the geese outside the side gate who come waddling after me with their long necks stretched out when I go that way, I dream at night. As a man environed by wild beasts, might dream of lions. Here is a long passage, what an enormous perspective I make of it. Leading from Peggotty's kitchen to the front door. A dark storeroom opens out of it, and that is a place, to be run past at night, for I don't know what may be among those tubs and jars and old tea chests, when there is nobody in there with a dimly burning light, letting a moldy air come out of the door, in which there is the smell of soap, pickles, pepper, candles, and coffee, all at one whiff. Then there are the two parlors. The parlor in which we sit of an evening, my mother and I and Peggotty, for Peggotty is quite our companion, when her work is done, and we are alone, and the best parlor, where we sit on a Sunday, grandly, but not so comfortably. There is something of a doleful air about that room to me, for Peggotty has told me I don't know when, but apparently ages ago about my father's funeral, and the company having their black cloaks put on. One Sunday night my mother reads to Peggotty and me in there, how Lazarus was raised up from the dead. And I am so frightened, that they are afterwards obliged to take me out of bed, and show me the quiet churchyard out of the bedroom window, with the dead all lying in their graves at rest, below the solemn moon. There is nothing half so green, that I know anywhere, as the grass of that churchyard. Nothing half so shady as its trees. Nothing half so quiet as its tombstones. The sheep are feeding there, when I kneel up, early in the morning, in my little bed in a closet within my mother's room, to look out at it, and I see the red light shining on the sundial, and think within myself, is the sundial glad, I wonder, that it can tell the time again? Apostrophe apostrophe, here is our pew in the church. What a high-backed pew! With a window near it, out of which our house can be seen, and is seen many times during the morning service, by Peggotty, who likes to make herself as sure as she can, that it's not being robbed, or is not in flames. But though Peggotty's eye wanders, she is much offended if mine does, and frowns to me, as I stand upon the seat, that I am to look at the clergyman. But I can't always look at him, I know him without that white thing on, and I am afraid of his wondering why I stare so, and perhaps stopping the service to inquire, and what am I to do? It's a dreadful thing to gape, but I must do something. I look at my mother, but she pretends not to see me. I look at a boy in the aisle, and he makes faces at me. I look at the sunlight coming in at the open door through the porch, and there I see a stray sheep, I don't mean a sinner, but mutton half making up his mind, to come into the church. I feel that, if I looked at him any longer, I might be tempted to say something out loud, and what would become of me then? I look up at the monumental tablets on the wall, and try to think of Mr. Bodgers late of this parish, and what the feelings of Mrs. Bodgers must have been, when affliction sore, long time Mr. Bodgers bore, and physicians were in vain. I wonder whether they called in Mr. Chillip, and he was in vain, and if so, how he likes to be reminded of it once a week. I look from Mr. Chillip, in his Sunday neckcloth, to the pulpit, and think what a good place it would be to play in, and what a castle it would make, with another boy coming up the stairs to attack it, and having the velvet cushion with the tassels thrown down on his head. In time my eyes gradually shut up, and, from seeming to hear the clergyman singing a drowsy song in the heat, I hear nothing, until I fall off the seat with a crash, and am taken out, more dead than alive, by Peggotty. And now I see the outside of our house, with the latticed bedroom windows standing open to let in the sweet-smelling air, and the ragged old rook's nests still dangling in the elm trees at the bottom of the front garden. Now I am in the garden at the back, beyond the yard where the empty pigeon house and dog kennel are a very preserve of butterflies, as I remember it, with a high fence, and a gate and padlock, where the fruit clusters on the trees, riper and richer than fruit has ever been since, in any other garden, and where my mother gathers some in a basket, while I stand by, bolting furtive gooseberries, and trying to look unmoved. A great wind rises, and the summer is gone in a moment. We are playing in the winter twilight, dancing about the parlor. When my mother is out of breath, and rests herself in an elbow chair, I watch her winding her bright curls round her fingers, and straightening her waist, and nobody knows better than I do, that she likes to look so well, and is proud of being so pretty. That is among my very earliest impressions. That, and a sense, that we were both a little afraid of Peggotty, and submitted ourselves in most things to her direction, were among the first opinions, if they may be so called, that I ever derived from what I saw. Peggotty and I were sitting one night by the parlor fire, alone. I had been reading to Peggotty about crocodiles. I must have read very perspicuously, or the poor soul must have been deeply interested, for I remember she had a cloudy impression, after I had done, that they were a sort of vegetable. I was tired of reading, and dead sleepy, but having leave, as a high treat, to sit up until my mother came home from spending the evening at a neighbor's, I would rather have died upon my post, of course, than have gone to bed. I had reached that stage of sleepiness, when Peggotty seemed to swell and grow immensely large. I propped my eyelids open with my two forefingers, and looked perseveringly at her as she sat at work, at the little bit of wax candle she kept for her thread, how old it looked, being so wrinkled in all directions, at the little house with a thatched roof, where the yard measure lived, at her workbox with a sliding lid, with a view of St. Paul's Cathedral with a pink dome painted on the top. At the brass thimble on her finger, at herself, whom I thought lovely. I felt so sleepy that I knew if I lost sight of anything for a moment, I was gone. Peggotty, apostrophe says I, suddenly, were you ever married? Apostrophe, Lord, Master Davy, apostrophe replied Peggotty. What's put marriage in your head? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she answered with such a start that it quite awoke me. And then she stopped in her work and looked at me with her needle drawn out to its thread's length. But were you ever married, Peggotty? Apostrophe, apostrophe says one. You are a very handsome woman, and you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I thought her in a different style from my mother, certainly, but of another school of beauty, I considered her a perfect example. There was a red velvet footstool in the best parlor, on which my mother had painted a nosegay. The groundwork of that stool, and Peggotty's complexion appeared to me to be one, and the same thing. The stool was smooth, and Peggotty was rough, but that made no difference. Me handsome, Davy. Apostrophe, apostrophe said Peggotty. Lock, no, my dear. But what put marriage in your head? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I don't know. You mustn't marry more than one person at a time, may you, Peggotty? Apostrophe, apostrophe, certainly not, apostrophe says Peggotty, with the promptest decision. But if you marry a person, and the person dies, why then you may marry another person, mayn't you, Peggotty? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you may, apostrophe says Peggotty, if you choose, my dear. That's a matter of opinion. Apostrophe, but what is your opinion, Peggotty? Apostrophe, apostrophe said one. I asked her, and looked curiously at her, because she looked so curiously at me. My opinion is, apostrophe said Peggotty, taking her eyes from me, after a little indecision and going on with her work, that I never was married myself, Master Davy, and that I don't expect to be. That's all I know about the subject. Apostrophe, you and cross, I suppose, Peggotty, are you? Apostrophe, apostrophe said I, after sitting quiet for a minute. I really thought she was, she had been so short with me. But I was quite mistaken. For she laid aside her work, which was a stocking of her own, and opening her arms wide, took my curly head within them, and gave it a good squeeze. I know it was a good squeeze, because, being very plump, whenever she made any little exertion, after she was dressed, some of the buttons on the back of her gown flew off. And I recollect two bursting to the opposite side of the parlor, while she was hugging me. Now let me hear some more about the Kirkendalls, apostrophe said Peggotty, who was not quite right in the name yet, for I hadn't heard half enough. Apostrophe, I couldn't quite understand why Peggotty looked so queer, or why she was so ready to go back to the crocodiles. However, we returned to those monsters, with fresh wakefulness on my part, and we left their eggs in the sand for the sun to hatch. And we ran away from them, and baffled them by constantly turning, which they were unable to do quickly, on account of their unwieldy make, and we went into the water after them, as natives, and put sharp pieces of timber down their throats, and in short we ran the whole crocodile gauntlet. I did, at least, but I had my doubts of Peggotty, who was thoughtfully sticking her needle into various parts of her face and arms, all the time. We had exhausted the crocodiles, and begun with the alligators, when the garden bell rang. We went out to the door, and there was my mother, looking unusually pretty, I thought, and with her a gentleman with beautiful black hair and whiskers, who had walked home with us from church last Sunday. As my mother stooped down on the threshold, to take me in her arms and kiss me, the gentleman said I was a more highly privileged little fellow than a monarch or something like that. For my later understanding comes, I am sensible, to my aid here. What does that mean? Apostrophe, apostrophe, I asked him, over her shoulder. He patted me on the head, But somehow, I didn't like him, or his deep voice, and I was jealous that his hand should touch my mother's in touching me, which it did. I put it away, as well as I could. Oh, Davy! Remonstrated my mother. Dear boy! Said the gentleman. I cannot wonder at his devotion. I never saw such a beautiful color on my mother's face before. She gently chid me for being rude, and, keeping me close to her shawl, turned to thank the gentleman for taking so much trouble as to bring her home. She put out her hand to him as she spoke, and, as he met it with his own, she glanced, I thought, at me. Let us say good night, my fine boy, said the gentleman. When he had bent his head, I saw him over my mother's little glove. Good night, said one. Come, let us be the best friends in the world, said the gentleman, laughing. Shake hands. My right hand was in my mother's left, so I gave him the other. Why, that's the wrong hand, Davy. Laughed the gentleman. My mother drew my right hand forward, but I was resolved, for my former reason, not to give it him, and I did not. I gave him the other, and he shook it heartily, and said I was a brave fellow, and went away. At this minute I see him turn round in the garden, and give us a last look with his ill-omened black eyes, before the door was shut. Peggotty, who had not said a word, or moved a finger, secured the fastenings instantly, and we all went into the parlor. My mother, contrary to her usual habit, instead of coming to the elbow chair by the fire, remained at the other end of the room, and sat singing to herself. Hope you have had a pleasant evening, ma'am, said Peggotty, standing as stiff as a barrel in the center of the room, with a candlestick in her hand. Much obliged to you, Peggotty, returned my mother, in a cheerful voice. I have had a very pleasant evening. A stranger or so makes an agreeable change, suggested Peggotty. A very agreeable change, indeed, returned my mother. Peggotty continuing to stand motionless in the middle of the room, and my mother resuming her singing, I fell asleep, though I was not so sound asleep, but that I could hear voices, without hearing what they said. When I half awoke from this uncomfortable doze, I found Peggotty and my mother both in tears, and both talking. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.